for this show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are at the dark of the moon. The dark of the moon, which is traditionally when people would gather to determine the course of culture and strengthen their alliances across species borders. So let's do that. Mushrooms having a moment is part of what our guest writes about. So more than perfectly, we are hosting Mushroom Messenger Mark J. Plotkin, ethnobotanist, advocate, author, podcast host, double Taurus, agent of plant-human collaboration throughout time, mentoree of Richard Evan Schultes. Lots to say there. He's the author of the book Tales of a Shaman's Apprentice. Other critically acclaimed books by Plotkin include Medicine Quest, The Killers Within, The Deadly Rise of Drug-Resistant Bacteria with Michael Schneerson, and The Shaman's Apprentice, a children's book with Lynn Cherry. I know her, called Environmental Hero by the Smithsonian. In the promo, I'm also listing his Wikipedia because it goes on and on and on. And we are enthused to explore wariness standards at this time and opportunities as a collaborative kinship assist, remedial support for our rogue species. Mark J. Plotkin, co-founder and president of Amazon Conservation Team, podcast Plants of the Gods. I'm subscribing right now, listen to part of it. Welcome. Welcome, Mark J. Plotkin.
Thank you, Carolyn. Good to reconnect.
Yeah, no, that's really great. We have so many people in common, and this is such a welcoming audience. Absolutely. So we can go many, many places, right? But you did suggest three things that we can go wherever we want. And primarily the Entheo Renaissance and your guidelines and plants showing up to help the humans, science proving folklore, right? Stamets says the NIH studies that psilocybe mushrooms increase curiosity, confidence, and kindness. And he says those are leadership qualities. So we'll dive into all these things. So first, you know, you had said, how psychedelics can build bridges between unlikely allies, conservative Republicans like John Boehner, cannabis, and Rick Perry, iboga. There's a thought. Have become entheogen evangelists. And then I had sort of backstage written back to you, and Peter Thiel is opening entheo retreat centers too, so it's like, oh, it's a dodgy time, right?
Totally. And, you know, I think these hallucinogens allow us to build bridges, but in some cases there may be people we don't want to build bridges to. I think the bigger picture is the magic involved in these mushrooms and these flowering plants that allows us to do things that are unexpected, unplanned, and sometimes fruitful, not always. And I'm quick to point out that in the middle of what we call the psychedelic renaissance, where we are now, that psychedelics aren't always good. They aren't always helpful. Our mutual friend, right, Michael Pollan, has written that people can come apart under these unsupervised ayahuasca ceremonies with some of these rent-a-shamans, as we call them. So yep, the idea that all plants are good, no plants are poisonous, no hallucinogens can be harmful. Check out the website Lucy in the Sky with Nazis, where some of these...
Wait, say that again, sorry. Lucy in the Sky with what?
Lucy in the Sky with Nazis. N-A-Z-I-S. Okay.
Thank you.
That there are right-wing groups that are taking these substances to reinforce these hideous ideas and thoughts.
Yes. And, you know, have you yourself partaken of iboga?
I'm a tropical American guy. Mushrooms to ayahuasca, that's my beat.
Right. Anyway, it's just an astounding, well, it's kind of everywhere, and people are taking it casually, and you can get microdoses of iboga. And I did a major iboga journey decades ago, and it's like, I can't imagine, because in the traditional form, you don't move for 20 hours, right? I mean, you're just like, anyway. So, and it was given a pretty good film expression in the Wakanda film, where the leader takes the iboga before he assumes leadership, which is part of the traditional thing, where you see your
right
shadow. All right, back to, and so there's Rick Perry, who knows? So yeah, absolutely. The hijacking, and that's, you know, and you said, you know, why is the psychedelic renaissance happening now? and what are the positive and negative aspects? And we should go into that and further. So you'd run it together with how psychedelics like mushrooms can have very positive therapeutic effects beyond tripping, but we'll get to that next. But the psychedelic renaissance happening now, I mean, do you, it's huge, right?
Totally huge. I think it's kind of, the genie is out of the bottle, the toothpaste is out of the tube, and these are plants that can heal, these are plants that can harm. And my worry is they've been oversold as a panacea, they've been oversold as they can't hurt you, and we're really seeing a downside to that.
Right. You know, and just in the sense of the container, right, I'd written that, you know, somebody had said, you know, about a wild song, you know, that was before entheogens were repackaged as therapy and then repackaged as a business, which is also a whole other complex factor, you know, in which once it's a business, you let anybody in to the group. And it's like, oh, do you want to just lay out some navigational guidelines for the team?
Well, I would say, first of all, let the buyer beware and understand that when you're removing these sacred substances, powerful substance, from their ritual context, you need to be very careful. You can't tell me I can trust the shaman because he got a good rating on Yelp, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've had people tell me that. And there was some billionaire a few months back who said, you know, I took the mushrooms and psilocybin changed my life. For the very first time, I finally understood Bitcoin. That's a quote.
Right.
So, well, I think the evangelists like you and me who've been promoting this all along, who understood the power and potential, maybe we can pat ourselves on the back. At the same time, we have to be aware that people are not always using this the right way in the right context and the right dosage, and that's where the worry comes in.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, I started off, you know, I've known Andy Weil since I was 14. And in the late 60s, I guess maybe 1970, he got given a grant to go around the world taking drugs. It was one of his books. And he said, there are no cultures without drugs or plants, you know, but there are cultures with no problems. And what he said was just what you said. He said, ritual context and whole plant. You know, here's your cup of coffee when you're 12, you know, only in the morning, the ritual context. And that seems important because you are also environmental advocate, biocultural conservation and good manners guidelines. You know, what might you put on our work table about that?
Well, I'm an ethnobotanist. I trained under the same great ethnobotanist that Andy Weil did, Richard Schultes, the father of ethnobotany. And, you know, neither of us, none of us imagined way back in the 60s and 70s that we would have so much interest and even resulting in overconsumption of some very endangered plants like peyote. So to quote Charles Dickens, not often quoted in ethnobotanical circles, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. And as an ethnobotanist, what I worry about is the loss of these species in nature, particularly in the Amazon where I work, and even more endangered is the loss of the knowledge of how to use these things. And, you know, when I started doing this 40 years ago, ayahuasca was pretty much restricted to the Northwest Amazon, where my organization, the Amazon Conservation Team, focuses. That's the cradle of ayahuasca culture and shamanism. And now ayahuasca is used daily from Israel to Indonesia to Istanbul. So our concern is to focus the roots of these vines, or as our friend Stamets would say, the mycelia of these fungi, while people are focusing on the fruits of these organisms. And so no forests, no shamans. I think we're in for a bad patch. And yes, things like ayahuasca grows well in Hawaii. Okay, that's not going to go extinct. However, ayahuasca without a shaman, for me, is a dangerous proposition. And I think one of the challenges people face at the time where this interest is ever growing is, how do you find a real shaman? There aren't enough to go around. How do you find a professional guide? Well, there's more and more out there, but there's still not enough. So it worries me when I read about people, oh, I bought ayahuasca on the internet, or, you know, I went to Esalen good for a weekend, and now I know how to heal with the mind. I'm not so sure. So I don't think those of us who are experienced, to quote that great philosopher Jimi Hendrix, should be snobs and say, well, you know, I only do it with shamans in Colombia, so nobody else should do it. Of course not. But by the same token, we need to educate people to say, make an informed choice here. And this isn't like, you know, drinking a beer or smoking a joint. The downsides are real and extant, and people do get hurt.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and the Icaros, right, the sacred songs of ayahuasca, I had one session with many crank people, right, and then a real person, although even that was complex. But when he sang the Icaros, it was so kindred. It was like it really interacted with ayahuasca in your body. It's like, whoa, I can't imagine doing it without that. Although even then, you know, it seems the trickiest diaspora. Even with, you know, long trained shamans, just people got away with a lot. You know, in my group, people were saying, ayahuasca told me I was a great shaman and I should move to the jungle and leave my children and wife behind. I'm like, no, just anyway. So there's a lot of complexity there about you know, and the ayahuasca. But let's go back to mushrooms and Richard Evan Schultes. I have somebody gifted me his little golden book of hallucinogenic plants for children.
I have it in English and Spanish and a place of honor on my bookshelf as well.
Right. Well, I got the letter telling me that they were gifting me, and I now have it somewhere. And it was poignant because Schultes thought that would be his retirement fund, right? But no, right after that, you know, people were like, no, go away. So yeah, but it is darling and beautiful, right? And it's in keeping with, you know, you writing the book with Lynn Cherry, I have it here. Right, the Shaman's Apprentice, a children's book with Lynn Cherry.
Yep.
What a good idea.
Well, you know, my first book, Tales of a Shaman's Apprentice, was very successful. And I had two little girls. And so I wanted to tell the story in a format that they could understand. So I guess I was in a gender-fluid period in the sense that I made the protagonist a woman, based on me. And I used my wife as the model for Lynn's marvelous artwork, and I named her after my eldest daughter, Gabriella. But, you know, we live in an age of a very complicated media, which is changing all the time. When you and I were growing up, there were three channels of TV, and that was about it, right? I mean, now you have Instagram and TikTok and all this other stuff. If you want to get a message across, you really need to work in a variety of media. Even if folks like us grew up with radio and TV, that's still the mainstay. But I will say this about my beloved mentor, Schultes. He was quite the trickster. And I mean that in the most positive way. People think of this staid and stolid Harvard professor with his crew cut and his white lab coat. But the man had an amazing sense of humor. You know, the golden guides, which people our age grew up with, were little natural history guides, a guide to reptiles, a guide to seashells. And Schultes decided to go on a hallucinogenic plant. How many people have written hallucinogenic plant guidebooks for 10-year-olds? Just Schultes. And just to show you that that wasn't the beginning and end of his pixie-like sense of humor, he was always fighting with the missionaries in the Northwest Amazon who were trying to get the Indians to stop drinking ayahuasca. So as a final act of defiance, Schultes took his right-hand man, an Ngano shaman's apprentice named Pedro Wahibioy, that I knew well, and they planted ayahuasca mines all around the biggest church in that part of Colombia.
Yes, very wonderful. Yeah, that's true. And I guess we're just including everybody. We can't help ourselves. Somebody who knows, who's taken many many ayahuasca journeys, but at one point said, "What if it is just a neurotoxin?" Which I don't think is true, but I thought it was interesting that he would say such a heretical thing. And it goes to your cautionary quality, which is, yeah, it's a powerful thing to have a responsible shaman. Do you think the Icaros are also a crucial part of the whole dynamic?
I think ceremony is a part of any form of healing. If you went to the pharmacy and the pharmacist came out in a dirty Grateful Dead t-shirt with dirty dreadlocks and dirty toenails, you'd run out of there. The pharmacist is supposed to wear a white coat, but why do pharmacists wear a white coat? They don't make anything. They don't make medicines in the back. It's just, it conveys a message of professionalism and cleanliness and hygiene and healing. And it's the same with the sacred ayahuasca songs. You know, that's a reductionist approach people don't get. Like, well, if I just take the psilocybin, why do I need the mushrooms? You know, if I take the mushrooms, why do I have to go to Oaxaca and hear Maria Sabina's granddaughter sing all night? Well, you may not have to, but you may not be getting the full healing experience. I went through a very deep ayahuasca ceremony with an Ngannou shaman. Again, this is from the Sibundoy where we worked, a sacred valley of ayahuasca in Colombia. And one of the participants woke up and said to the shaman, hey, I didn't see anything. You know, and the guy looked at her and he said, you want to, well, the equivalent of, he said, you want to see a light show, go to Disneyland. Okay, that's not what this is about. You get out of ayahuasca what you need. Sometimes you just go to sleep and you de-stress, and sometimes you go to the ninth dimension and make love to the goddess of the river underwater. Okay, I can't top that.
Yeah, no, that is great. Yeah, and it's also it's so American. I did go to a gathering. No complicated way of getting there, I know. But that's where, and I didn't know what we were headed into. And the person who invited me said, well, the first evening will be the most kind of dramatic, which is injected DMT. I'm like, whew, I've not done such a thing. And there were ayahuasqueras from Colombia and who were there just to check out this modern thing. And the person who was doing it was like, I want to skip the ceremony. I want to skip the vomiting. I want to go just right for the thing. And I don't know if you've done such a thing, but there you do get colors. It's like, and all kinds of interesting things happen, you know, and it's sort of like the building blocks of creation. And our host said, well, who wants to go again? And I go, sure, and up the dose. And it was one of those things that was like, oh, maybe not. And I really thought I was dead, and it wasn't a happy experience. And I went online to look at Terrence's commentary, and we both agreed that if actual death is any less showbiz, death should get its money back, because it's like, whoa. But that rapid thing, you know, again, extracted from the plant, you know. And have you done such a thing? Have you done DMT by itself?
No interest. No. Haven't done it, won't do it.
Right. So, no, I think that's right. I think that was like, that's was interesting, and that's enough of that. Going back to the intelligence of the plant. And so the Renaissance, I mean, do you animistically approach that the mushrooms do want to help humans with their enhanced kinship? Is that
the
way you
I
think?
Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. And, you know, it was Carl Jung who said, I don't reject something just because I can't understand it. And this is my attitude towards a lot of things, whether mushrooms or plants can talk to me, astrology, things I don't understand. You know, I try and keep an open mind. I'm not a sucker. But people who just reject everything that doesn't fit the Western model are probably not listening to this program in the first place. But I will say something about mushrooms, which I think is very important. You know, Paul Stamets just came out with a fabulous new book called Psilocybe Mushrooms in Their Natural Habitat. It's a real feast for the eyes, the heart, the soul, very well educated, lots of mushroom history. I always pair that with my buddy Chris Hobbs' book, Medicinal Mushrooms, which is the standard reference, which should be on everybody's shelf. And I also want to touch on the fact that you mentioned Terrence McKenna. Terrence McKenna, one of his greatest legacies was the stoned ape hypothesis, where Terrence said the way that our primate ancestors became humans is they came down from the trees and took mushrooms, and that was the beginning of cognition, that was the beginning of intellect, that was the beginning of speech. You know, he may have been onto something. Human evolution is too complicated to think, you know, some monkey somewhere ate a mushroom and turned into humans. However, there's a complementary theory called the drunk monkey hypothesis, which said, no, they didn't come down from the trees and eat magic mushrooms. They came down from the trees and eat ripe fruits. And ripe fruits generate alcohol. So by you know, getting drunk or slightly buzzed, they became bolder. They became more social. And that was the creation of the human mind. But the point I'm making here, the place I want to go with this, is the Mocha-Java hypothesis, which I'm just publishing, which says that, okay, mushrooms and grapes may have had a role, but I think it was coffee. Because coffee is native to the cloud forests of southern Ethiopia. That's the northern edge of the Olduvai Gorge, where humans arose. And if just imagine this, Caroline, if you have three monkeys running across the savanna being chased by a hungry lion, which one's going to survive and thrive? Is the one tripping his brains out on psilocybin from the mushroom? Is it the drunk one who ate the fermented grapes? Or is it the one hopped up on caffeine and hauling ass?
So they didn't drink coffee, right? But they even eat the little coffee red beads.
Yeah, they ate the little red berries. And the story from Ethiopia of how people discovered it was that there was a goat herder, and the goat herder saw his goats eating these red berries, and they became very frisky. And that was the clue that there was something to this berry they should try. And you got to remember, in this world, there were no other stimulants. There was no amphetamines. There was no tea in the region where our people arose. So the first stimulant would have had a very powerful effect on the human nervous system, made people faster, stronger, quicker thinking, social bonding. So I think it's the Mocha-Java hypothesis that's going to carry the day.
Well, again, you plants and humans backwards and forwards is a wonderful embodied dedication that you have. And yeah, Napoleon's army went on strike. They were like, we're not doing anything. We're not fighting unless we have sugar and coffee. So
yep,
they sort of came together.
True. Yeah. And then that was cut off by the British blockade. And Napoleon launched a campaign to find substitutes in France, because they couldn't get coffee and sugar from their tropical colonies. So they found out that the sugar beet could produce sugar. That was success. But they could not find a substitute for coffee. So what they began doing was adulterating their limited supplies of coffee with chicory. So after the war was over, these French people had developed a taste for coffee with chicory. And that is why in my hometown in New Orleans, which was French before it was American, we still drink coffee with chicory.
Although the story is told about Napoleon, who arrives at a house and says, bring me all the chicory, bring me all the chicory. And is this all of it? Now make me coffee without it. Anyway, so, yeah. But, yeah, your home base is New Orleans. I missed that in your bio. How wonderful.
New Orleans born and raised, but I live in the D.C. area now.
I know. We're neighbors. I'm sorry, say what?
No, but I get back to New Orleans as much as I can.
Yes. Well, there's a city that really keeps the portals open between invisible and visible, absolutely. And, and absolutely, you know, many stories, Stone Ape, you know, I know that Stamets and Weil take that on going, Yeah, and always so many stories. So we do not impose constraining certainty on liberating mystery, because there are many stories all confluencing, and we go, and certainty is useful, but it's also a booby prize. So wonder, and that idea of wonder and enhanced, I find the mushrooms enhanced call and response intimacy of some kind, going, oh. And the whole huge thing, also, you wanted to get to the many of the wonderful things that, I have it in my notes, but you have it in your notes, probably more handy, but that the mushrooms also enhance, where am I, vaccines? No, where I'm missing your comments.
This is Stamets's work, not all of which has been published, that using mushroom or mushroom extracts in conjunction with vaccines, lengthens the life of the vaccine and extends their effectiveness. So this is another important point I want to make, that it's not all about whether a plant or a fungus can have you trip the light fantastic, that there are therapeutic benefits of using these things other ways. For example, microdosing being a perfect example. You're not tripping when you're microdosing, at least not if you're doing it right, but there are therapeutic effects which are now being tested and proven in the lab. Another example is beta blockers. A lot of people our age are taking beta blockers, but I've never met a physician prescribing beta blockers who realized that these were created by Albert Hofmann, inventor of LSD, who invented beta blockers, looking at the structure of the psilocybin molecule. So again, it's not whether there's alkaloids, there's not whether you can go to the ninth dimension that limits the value and benefits of these plants and fungi or hallucinogenic frogs. And I cover this in detail in my podcast, Plants of the Gods, where we make the point that, yes, these are the foundational substances that led to human civilization, whether it's coffee, whether it's psilocybin, whether it's opium, but there are other and new therapies being developed all the time from these very, very, very old plants and fungi.
Yes, and the medicinal mushrooms, you know, when I was in my own underworld medical journey, and, you know, when you do chemo, they go, you can't take anything that helps you. And I went to, you know, Andy Weil and his wonderful colleague, and they said, oh, they probably haven't read the Oriental studies on how medicinal mushrooms enhance the efficacy of chemo. So I go back to my doctors and I go, perhaps you have not read the Oriental studies. And they're like, you're right. And they read them and they go, okay, it's now an accepted protocol. So we do good wherever we can in the cross pollinating, right? And it was one of those things, you know, where we, you know, when we're in an extreme circumstance, we can really tell, like, yes, no. Like, and I just remember I said to Stamets, send me everything you think is useful. Just putting it to my tongue, and it was like, yes, this is good.
Well, I think those of us who are interested in these issues and experienced with these issues have a role to play as boundary walkers. Bringing this type of information to our physicians who don't know it, telling our physicians that those beta blockers come from mushrooms, that this is something new with vaccines, which you may not have seen. I mean, nobody can read everything in technical or regular literature. And, you know, let's help introduce this to a broader audience. But I will say this once again, we can finish up where we started. Let the buyer beware. I had a friend write me this morning saying, oh, look, this plant in Brazil deep in the rainforest that nobody's ever heard of can cure cancer. And I pointed out that's a very common tropical fruit that grows all over the Caribbean, all over Brazil. It is not, I've been in the depths of the rainforest. I've never seen it growing there. So just something that has worked in a test tube once or in a mouse trial once does not translate into a human success story. It might. But this is what I mean about people overselling some exciting ideas or leads.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, and also, I mean, I am an entheo-enthusiast and the psilocybe mushrooms. And absolutely, you know, sometimes you go, And also, you know, perhaps I shouldn't be on stage now. With, like, no, not the right move. All these lessons, and then there's a whole thing on microdosing LSD, you know, which is a related but interesting thing. It is complex and no certainty. And so you think, you know, with mushrooms, people should have guides or self-responsible,
I've done a lot of mushroom ceremonies with shamans in Oaxaca, which is the home of the original mushroom cults, and I've done mushrooms on my own. I mean, I went to college in the 60s and 70s. I much prefer doing it under the guidance of a shaman. I think it's much more therapeutic. But I have to say, frankly, I would much rather take mushrooms by myself than ayahuasca by myself, which I've never shown. So let's not be innocent here. But, you know, dosage, setting, context, all of those things play a role.
And dedication. You know, I mean, it's all kind of part of manners, right? And here you are reblooming the world and doing so much, and there's many things that we will talk about. I know you are going back to your engaged life. We're very happy for, because you're doing so much, right? I mean, is this like one of the most kind of powerfully synchronous coming alive times for you?
It is, because a lot of things are coming together, but we also face threats that we've never faced before, whether it's deforestation in the Amazon or whether it's aspects of the political situation. So, you know, people right. say to me, is the glass half full or half empty? And my response is always the same. Any glass that's half full is half empty, and vice versa.
Right. All right. Well, we will reluctantly release you, and I will carry on some of this conversation into the next half hour about myrrh, frankincense, and anti-inflammatories, and Syrian rue, and your splendid podcast that I've subscribed to, and Hatshepsut, with whom I have a particular affinity. It goes on and on and on. So that's wonderful. Thank you so much for woofing, and contributing your erudition, your dedicated reverent erudition to us right now.
Do it again.
Oh, that would be splendid. All right, we will let you go. Thank you so much. Okay, team. So so yes, that was our great ally, Mark J. Plotkin, a wonderful erudition, dedicated reverent erudition. And we're going to have a long break music, and then I will go into Diane Wilson's report from Texas. She will be our guest next week, but there's a lot to say. Also, this new moon that we are preparing for now. But first, here's this. It's long, but it's extraordinary. It's from our psychedelic heritage. It's 13th Floor Elevators from 1969. It's a long thing, but the words are astounding. And I love in the notes, it said, No entheogens or LSD was used in the composing of this song, said no one ever. So here's just a little bit of trippiness. Settle in and ride along with it, and we'll be back afterwards. There we go.
Disciples, the unending sun.
Okay, team, this is Caroline Casey Weaver of Context for the Visionary Activist Show. We're partway through. Our first guest for the half hour is Mark J. Plotkin. Really great. That was our long break, right, which is 13th floor elevators as we go into our new moon, dark of moon preparation. But that is an extraordinary thing. Thanks to Bill Gallagher for turning me onto it. I didn't know about that song or that band when I was, you know, an early tripping hippie teenager, 1970 or so, but it's the 60s. Out of Texas, we're going to turn to Texas with the report from Diane Wilson out of Texas, and she will be our guest next week for the full hour. So interesting thing, if you're wild in Texas, you're really wild. So that's the band 13th Floor Elevators. It's a remarkable piece because the language, right? Again, there's very little that's repeated except the one phrase, there is no season where you are grown. You are always risen from the seeds you've sown, and there is no reason to rise alone. There we go. Very new moon in Virgo. Soon it will be, West Coast, it will be tomorrow. It'll be August 22nd at 11:07 p.m. On the East Coast, it'll be Saturday the 23rd at 2:07 a.m. But this dark of the moon time, and I like to turn to another Virgo in that realm, which is Marie Laveau, the great voodoo queen of New Orleans, a splendid Virgo. And she said, you know, before new moon, before any important thing, clean your house, tweak your house until it sings. And so she would always, again, dark of moon, especially new moon Virgo, open the back door, open the front door, sweep out the past, and welcome in the new. It's useful, just the attention to small details, again, in this dark of moon time. This new moon is noteworthy. It's the new moon of the power of language crafting, one of the great first technologies of participation, all language really, to have a name. The astrological language is one of the great, really ancient teachings about what it is to be a fully participatory Earth citizen. And so this new moon will be at 0 degrees of Virgo. Much happening in the choreography at 0, 1 early degrees. So these are first responder degrees, and it's a part of us that's sort of like a wet finger in the wind going, oh, I can't see it, but I can feel it. Here we go. So as the sun and moon wed at 0 Virgo, they're doing a lot, which is they're forming a Thor's hammer, right? First to Pluto, 135 degree angle, awareness of danger. We go, right, that's for sure true. And very much what Mark Plotkin's dedicated to, and many of us in the listening audience, and I include myself, which is plants, plants into human community. And what have we forgotten that we must remember? Certainly ritual, honoring, manners, respect, dedication. Because the other side of the sun, moon, with its connection to Pluto in Aquarius, which is our assignment to discern the distinction between a cult and a community. Cult is the toxic mimic of community, where people outsource their autonomy, it's hierarchical, it's all of those things. And what Mark J. Plotkin was talking about is also people taking entheogens to write computer code. Well, this is an old tradition. When I was in the rainforest with the Botanical Preservation Corps, may they be praised, and Terence McKenna and all kinds of people. But there were also a huge number of tech people. This is 20 years ago, maybe. With their plant formulas for writing code, and it was big but kind of innocent. And then Mark J. Plotkin was bringing up, people going, I saw God, and God has told me how to make money writing these codes, and Peter Thiel opening entheogen, retreat centers. It's like, it's dodgy now, this transition of plants and sacredness and ritual and context and connected to the land into therapy, which is fine, but it is a reduction in a sense, and then into a business. Pretty complex for us all to wonder about the entheogens, and the seeds. Now back to the chart here. So the sun and the moon to Pluto, what is a cult? What is the gathering of community, which is the antidote to cult? And we do feel and see and encourage, community rising, aroused, and mutual aid going, I'm in D.C., just outside D.C., right? It's my hometown, and there are, tanks in front of Union Station. It's an abomination and ridiculous. But D.C. is responding, and this is what we want to really honor, with music and liveliness and also just chasing ice out, not violently. And here's what we want from this new moon, the other side of the Thor's hammer. The sun and the moon have a 135-degree angle to Saturn and Neptune, dedicated visioning, see it. And that forms what's called a Thor's hammer, available to all of us with the new moon. It's the capacity to swoop corruption out of the halls of governance. We go, just experiment. Entertain with that possibility. Take it out and practice a few rounds, going, corruption out of the halls of governance. What a splendid idea. and something to experiment with. And it's also crucial, our beloved station and Pacifica itself as a living goddess like freedom, Eris, a planet way out in the Kuiper Belt, but still we have a name, is at 25 Aries, kind of forever. And when Pacifica was founded, the sun, S-U-N, was at 25 Aries, whose image is a woman bursting with gifts more than she can hold. And we go, right, Pacifica, and the part of all of us, it is. And it's right next to Chiron, the entire history of mentoring. And Chiron's image is, through imagination, lost opportunities are regained. So we want to, must be aware of danger, must have community aroused to protect all, And also at the same time, through imagination, lost opportunities are regained, we entertain that possibility. So there's much. And then Virgo is called the ruler of ritual magic, which is small things have a big effect. So whatever one's affinity to set one's altars, just how you arrange things with dedication. We say a ritual is not something that somebody even necessarily tells you what to do. It's any physical thing that we imbue with dedicated symbolism, like Marie Laveau. We can sweep the floor, or we can sweep out the past as we're sweeping the floor. And as Santero friends have said, all ritual is literalized metaphor, and cooling things out. This is, again, Yoruba, it's New Orleans, it's all of those things, which is right now, let us say, we all want to be agents of cool out, to cool water on the potential conflagrations, so many conflagrations in the world of horror and cruelty. And then also these tinder kegs where authority wants there to be some horrible, cruel explosion to then unleash these cults of cruel carnage. And we go, no, we want to cool out all these hot places. Things on the new moon were considered not superstition, but participatory symbolism to pour cool waters on the crossroads. To intend and to see cooling out. I do love long ago, you know, when Trump was going to visit Tulsa and I was on a podcast with the chief of police of Atlanta, a good guy before the bad guy. And I said, "Are you worried?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, my team, we're imagining an atmospheric mist of psilocybe mushroom and lavender to waft over Tulsa to cool out any bad thing so that it fizzles like a wet firecracker fart." And the chief of police at Atlanta said, "I'll do that with you." And he did. He did. We imagined it. You know, again, unlikely allies. There we go. And it happened, right? I mean, we don't have hubris about it or anything, but it's like, yeah, everything terrible that was planned didn't work. So we're just experimenting with what do we have at hand, you know, to cool things out, to be agents of cool out, to be calm, you know, to, you know, and on behalf of those who really can't, you know, who are in extreme reactive circumstance, if you've just seen some beloved blown away, you know, it behooves all of us not in that kind of immediate pain and unavoidable reactivity to waft into collective atmosphere this cool out to calm the explosiveness. And that's, you know, part of our assignment. And then always let's look at Mercury again, ruler of the crossroads, presider over the crossroads, wonderful Flash of the Spirit book. Said, you know, these crossroads moments, this is a crossroad, a new moon is a crossroad at zero Virgo. Virgo is the incarnational realm of Hermes or Hermia, language as magic, as intentional. It's the whole Hermeticism realm. And as it enters, as we have a new moon, it's going to square Uranus, trickster genius, in Gemini, the other Mercury, the conversational Mercury. So there's a description, which is, we might all feel wired, but the guidance is like, for all of us to be able to communicate complex ideas in a liberating vernacular understandable to all beings, you know, and for everybody to go, well, what am I a messenger for? You know, Mark J. Plotkin is a messenger on behalf of what he loves and the tribes in the Amazon with whom he spent decades and decades and decades. And then for each one of us to go, to wonder, you know, what shall I be a messenger? And what wants me to be its messenger? This participatory animism that I find so enthusing. And remember the Thai saying, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. So it's full of opportunity. It's a greased lightning time. Uranus, Pluto, Neptune all in cahoots. So it behooves us to not leave the potential for the dementors to be up to their nefarious things, you know, information technology and tyranny. And we go, no. It behooves all of us to say, if we entertain the possibility, we're moving into a very rapid pace, we know that anyway, of information, then it behooves us to say, well, what is it we want to put out to assume cultural narrative lead, you know, over the dementors, right? Come this way, here's a better story. Yeah, here's a taco and a much better story. So, yeah, and then let me touch on a lot of Diane Wilson's fantastic work. Even today, August 21st, 2025, you know, it's her, you know, contacts, you know, wilsonalamobay@aol.com and Dan San Antonio Bay. Court issues an injunction against Calhoun County School District trustees to stop final action on ExxonMobil's tax abatement for proposed plastic plants. We will unfold all this, you know, next week with Diane. And so it's requesting a temporary injunction against very bad things. And Diane Wilson is formidable and indefatigable. So she goes on, ExxonMobil reported nearly $34 billion in profits last year and is proposing a $10 billion ethylene cracker and polyethylene facility on the banks of Cox Creek and Keller Bay. Oh, this is going on everywhere. Their environmental impacts could destroy the Matagorda Bay fishing cooperatives, which, again, many people, including Diane, have been working on, and their 60-acre oyster farm, the largest in the Gulf of Mexico. And these are, you know, Texans and many people and Vietnamese people. The cooperative formed in February 2024 and represents over 240 local fishing industry workers who are investing millions in sustainable seafood production as an alternative to local industrial development. She says, many of us work long hours on the water and need fair notice to participate in these critical meetings. Right, the proposed ExxonMobil plant would be built near Keller Bay, which is crucial to revitalizing our fishing industry. This facility could pollute our water and undermine years of work to restore our bay's ecosystem. So Diane will be, again, full hour guest next week. Always splendid. And she says, we also did the first ever intervention opposing four modular nuclear reactors at Dow Seadrift Plant. I've been there with her. I've got a press release. I will send you. I've got it here. I'll post it. I'll post it online, and I'll post it in Patreon Visionary Activist Show as well. Yes, I'm going to be a better correspondent with my Patreon thing going, yes, here's the notes, and here's the thing. And we'll freely disseminate as well. So then Diane's last little text before we have her live next week is, stupid Governor Abbott. We go, yeah, Texas, a site of, you know, incredible tyranny and revoltingness and ingenuity. And, you know, State Senator, you know, Collier, you know, spending the night locked in because she would not sign a permission slip ordered by the Texas Dementors to be able to leave the facility and be accompanied and monitored by police. And she's like, no, I'm not doing that. Permission slip. What are we in, tyrannical dystopian fifth grade, for goodness sake? So yes, all of that that we want to honor. And then just back briefly here, you know, it is a tricky time. I love William Kittredge about the Raven Rattle. His line is, here we are, inextricably one with everything, however tricked, riding, in fact, on the back of trickiness itself. It's like, ooh, we're heading into a field. Again, this is the backstage dark of moon to the new moon tomorrow night. And we go, right, what would we want? You know, we have Thor's hammer to swoosh corruption out of the halls of governance. We have the opportunity to be a messenger voice on behalf of what we most love and are in nature. So there's all these things that are brewing and more. One last little thing here before we're going on our way out. Uranus is semi-square, 45 degree angle to Jupiter. Their conjunction was in April 21st of 2024, and this is a humming of that. So whatever was going on for everybody, in April of 2024, Jupiter and Uranus are the two biggest path openers, and now they're coming into cahoots. And it's technology and information and ingenuity on behalf of life. It's the Jupiter in Cancer, exalted in Cancer. People need stories more than they need bread. That sane reverence assume cultural narrative lead. So we are responsive, not just reactive. Semi-square Uranus, again, ingenuity. We could have a profound renaissance. All right, we're on our way. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, who keeps me on time. We will reconvene next week with Diane Wilson. And you can find us at coyotenetworknews.com and also at Patreon, Visionary Activist Show. Thank you so much. Woof, 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 woof.